Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Sappho Never Told You, your production of iHeartRadio. And welcome to another book club. Today, we are reading the current most banned / challenged book in America. You can see our recent, I actually think it was a classic about banned books where we updated at the top about what's going on there. 2019's Genderqueer, a memoir by Maya Kobabe with colors by Phoebe Kobabe. It's a graphic novel that explores gender identity and Maya's own experience coming to terms with how E identifies, and yes, E uses E, M, air pronouns, and we're going to try our best to get it right. It's not difficult. It's just kind of practicing.
It's new for us.
New
for me. I'll put that in my own mouth. It's new for me.
And the book talks about that. But let us know if we miss one, because we do want to get it right. But especially coming out as a young person and having all these questions, it's really heartfelt and open and honest. It's beautifully illustrated. It feels like you're reading a very open, sweet kind of look at somebody's life and their questions that they have, and trying to find ourselves and relating to other people. And it's just a very, it's, I don't know. After I read it, I felt so like I'd connected with someone.
Yeah, I would think that's the overall. And I know that's what A said at the end of the book, is that, and we'll get to it, when it talks about Maya teaching,
mm-hmm.
and a references to the fact that A doesn't have the courage to tell her own pronouns, but realizing how many young people were in the same similar position of being unfamiliar and unable to put into words how one might feel. So mm-hmm. how important these types of books are. And yeah, I when I was reading it, I was like, I feel like this might really connect with Annie. Like for me, yeah. It wasn't necessarily something I specifically connected with, but it was so eye-opening. It's one of those things that I feel like people should read to see an insight that's not about themselves, which we had a whole big discussion earlier. Because yeah, I don't necessarily relate with what Maya is speaking about, the confusion. Like, there's other confusions. I have my own identity with, like, racial and ethnicity and all of that. This is not one of my battles. But to see it and to read it and to see Maya's own experiences and the struggles mm-hmm. A went through, it's really eye-opening. A, B, is so necessary, again, for those, any of those who would want to say that they're allies, anyone who wants to say they want to be supportive, this is types of books should be what we read in general. Because even though you might think you know, you don't. And again, this kind of like, and like myself, I feel like you're going to find people, I'm like, oh, that's what these other individuals may be struggling with. Like that kind of level of openness. And yeah, it's also very sad. Like it's beautiful, but it really hurts my heart that Maya had to go through all of this. Kobabe had to go through all of this and still in this place of trying to undo or redo or relearn, not only about themselves, but about society as a whole and then finding the support system. And it sounds like Kobabe had a lot of good support in their life. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for him to go through all of that, to have, even though still there was a lot of misunderstandings and back and forths. So, of course, nothing is perfect in society in itself. But yeah, this book is definitely something that I think everyone should read. I said that I feel like TERFs should definitely read this. If you want to talk about why you might be questioning the validity of someone's identity.
Yes. And it did. We're going to talk about it more. But when I was reading it, I was definitely like, oh, I see. Like, that's the power of things like this, is we don't talk about it enough. And we don't talk about sex education. We don't talk about gender identity. We don't talk about sexual orientation. And to have something like this, I am a 35. I don't know how old I am. I'm 35-ish. your old woman, and I was reading it like, oh, huh, I've never thought about that, or like that connects with me and I don't know why. And
well, I love this too, because as I'm reading Kobabe's book and the memoir, I'm thinking, oh, we're close in the same age. I had a moment where because AR doing a timeline about when AR is in school and all of that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I think we're around the same age. Oh. I had that moment. But then at the same time, because A is learning so much about themselves still today, it makes me feel better at the same time because we are close in the same age. But yeah, when you kind of look at the time, I'm like, oh. Because in my head, with someone with that much experience, to me, they're older.
Mm-hmm.
Kobabe is not. For me, no.
No, and that kind of goes back to, you know, we were talking about, we have this assumption that I think a lot of us has internalized, me too, of, you know, by a certain age, you figured it out.
Right.
And you have it. Clearly, this whole show is kind of like proof of that. But also, it was really fun. We're going to talk about this at the end. But there were so many like, cultural references where I was like, yes, I'm right there. Yes.
Supernatural was brought in.
Supernatural, Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that was the other part. It's like, so much fan fiction was brought into this. I'm like, oh, Annie is having a field day.
I did. I was so happy. I was like, finally, we're just talking about it, like how important it was for us. I love it. We're going to talk about that, guaranteed. So, yes, as we did mention in our book banning episode, the funny thing with banning books is that it draws more attention to these books. I'm totally not on board with banning books, but it is true. And libraries have reported the very long wait list they are getting for this one. And honestly, I'm not sure we would be reading it for this book club.
I've never heard of it until you brought it to my attention as being the most banned book. So I'm like, good job, y'all. But it's kind of, again, we talked about how some authors are like, please put us on the banned list. That's going to give us all the publicity.
Yeah, it's so funny because I was like, we talked about how it was the most banned book. And I was like, oh, let me look into it. And then it said it was a graphic novel and it talks about fan fiction and asexuality. I was like, yes, that's it. We're talking about
inside
it.
Of this.
It is. So we've also done a book club on Fun Home, which is a graphic novel about a queer experience. And that one's also been banned a lot. And I think the images part has a lot to do with this. Even though the style of this one is very, I don't know how to phrase it. It's kind of like for younger people.
It's like younger cartoon animation level.
Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful, but it's definitely kind of feels like it's geared toward that demographic, which is great. But I think that's part of why it's getting banned so much.
I think the title in itself is probably Agreed. Why. I don't Agreed. Think many of the people who've banned this book have looked even inside of it. They just heard the words gender and queer. Done. Mm-hmm. Out.
Yep. Well, as we talked about in that book banning episode, yeah, most people openly, like, will say it, have never read the book. Don't know. And it is orchestrated by these conservative, there's certainly, it's not all that, but there are conservative organizations who are actively like, oh, here's a title I don't like, let's ban it. So just to keep that in mind. Also, politicians have weighed in, which I feel is indicative of how messed up this is. But they use words like grooming, obscene, it's pornographic, things like that. But there's a bunch of people who have said, like, weighed in on the opposite side. Like, here's a quote. The treatment of sex and nudity is also not high in impact, and it is not exploitative, offensive, gratuitous, or very detailed. And we're going to talk about this more at the end. But when I was thinking about this, there are so many books I read when I was really young that had like a lot of sexual assault or violence and no one raised a question about that.
Right.
It's when you're talking about something that could really benefit young people of how do you identify and exploring your gender identity. And that's when they're like, no, we should ban this. This is not good.
Right. Right. Again, remember having, we talked about in another episode, like magazines that had a lot of like sexualized context and for like teenagers. And it was in there very readily available. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And here's a quote from Kobabe. I drew as much as I felt like I needed to tell the story that I was trying to tell and get the points across that I was trying to make. And I honestly think the book is a lot less explicit than it could be or would have been if written by a different author. The topic of gender touches on identity and touches on sexuality, and it touches on all of these things. And it's hard to fully explain, I think, how a gender identity can impact every facet of life as an adult without touching at least a little bit on sexuality. And so I wanted to not shy away from that. And I did a great job, I feel like, because it was more of like the confusion of it being both, and I know you've talked about this, aroused, but not sexually attracted to people individually. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole complication in itself. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, when we're talking about gender identity, and I believe conservative Christian people would say the same thing because that's why they harp so much on heterosexuality, why that kind of sexuality is important. They talk about sexuality, whether it is, even if they are talking about wholesome shit, they're just talking about being wholesome as a heteronormative idea and nothing else really.
Right. Yeah. And I do think this is also like the very, we've sexualized things so much and we've just kept so much, like you don't talk about it, that something that shouldn't necessarily be sexualized or to the degree that you would ban it is being sexualized. But we'll talk about that more in a second. And I do think like, that's one of the biggest things people ask me about is that they don't get, they're like, how can you, it's clear that you can feel attraction and it's clear that you enjoy masturbating and they don't get that it doesn't, it's not, it's towards like fictional characters. And even then it's like the sweetest, like maybe I would kiss them. Like it's not.
And this is the shot I want on TikTok of you doing that little face as you said, kiss them.
Maybe we would cuddle.
Just cuddle a little bit.
That's it. But yeah, we are going to talk about that. I'm getting all flushed in the bear. Just talking about it. Oh my God.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position.
warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so the plot, and this is kind of, it's sort of all over the place because I was just like writing what was really connecting with me, but I really do recommend reading this book. It traces Maya's life with these questions, like, all of the questions E had and how that impacted her life choices. So, okay, the book begins in 2014 with Maya going off to college to get an MFA in comics. A teacher there convinces Maya to write an autobiography because it would be good for M and her creativity to write out her biggest secrets, to confront her biggest demons. When writing these secrets out, Maya realizes they all have to do with gender. Getting your periods, girly clothes, swimming, bathing suits, things like that. E wrote a short comic about all of these issues, but taped over them due to embarrassment, which reminds me of when I burned all of my journals, which is a real shame. The story then jumps back to the past, to 1992, when Maya's family moved to Northern California. The house didn't have working toilets, so Maya and the neighbor boy, Galen, often peed outside to avoid the like spider-infested outhouse. And the illustrations show the difference in peeing between the two of them. So it's like a lot of these little memories of, you know, something. What are these roles we're playing? What are these differences? And Maya not quite understanding them or relating to them.
Right. I feel like it's also the point of understanding that as youths, being very young, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter mm-hmm. until it's introduced that it has to matter.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So Maya also loved snakes and requested snake-themed items as often as possible. Maya and Galen didn't attend preschool or kindergarten, and their first mingling with kids their age in a social situation outside of their families devolved into a girls are not allowed because they have cooties defense. Neither of them knew what a cootie was. Entering into school, Maya struggled with things like painting, knitting, and reading. A did become the snake catcher. of the school. I thought that was super cute.
Yeah. I liked that a lot. And Maya sometimes got confused for a boy. A handful of other boys in the class had longer hair. This is like, again, it's just a bunch of small examples of and I say small being like, if it's not you, then it seems small. It is a big deal. But it kind of these like, oh, I don't get why girls have longer hair, boys have shorter hair. Like just these questions. On a field trip to a beach, after observing Air Dad taking off his shirt, Maya did too, wading into the water wearing only shorts. And some of the students called out, look, Maya's not wearing a shirt, just like a boy. And Maya's teacher made Maya put it back on, even though Maya was confused by the whole thing and believed everyone else was being silly. And then there's like a really cool illustration that showcases how Maya's parents never enforced gender norms, not on Maya nor on themselves. Air mom being athletic, a green thumb, crafty, never wearing makeup, not shaving. And then Air dad, who's an elementary school teacher, loved music and woodworking, being a mechanic, a jewelry maker, a rock collector, had long hair. So it was cool to see that illustrated. And then Maya details the last time E wore a bathing suit around Air peers when in a hot tub. A confident classmate pulled her leg out of the water and the water droplets just dripped neatly off of her freshly shaved legs. When Maya did it, the water collated on Air unshaved legs, and it annoyed Maya to encounter something else E didn't know. And that's a big theme of like not understanding all of these things. Soon after, E got Air first period and related to the fictional character Alana the Lioness by Tamora Beers, which I also read, who disguised herself as a boy to get by in this fictional world. The first time Alana got her period, she complained, "How long do I have to put up with this? I didn't ask to be born a girl. It's not fair." Maya, quote, never thought it would happen to him. E hid it for 3 days. Air parents gave him a gift to celebrate, but Maya saw no cause for celebration. And there's an illustration that hit really hard of all of the period-related items, like stain removers, acne paste, pain medications, depression, sleep aids, like all these things that don't sound like a fun time. Maya went on to hide Air period, refusing to use the school bathroom for 2 years and wearing the same pad for hours and hours. Maya described nightmares about menstrual blood staining Air legs, bathrooms without doors, or waiting in line while blood leaked through Air pants. Later in the book, E discusses how E preferred biker shorts as underwear and pads weren't compatible and turning to men's underwear. And this is something I was telling you right before, Samantha. I hated bra shopping and I cried when my mom told me I had to start wearing a bra. And a good friend of mine also kind of turned me on to, you can wear men's underwear. It might be more comfortable. You can wear men's shirts. Yeah, I remember being like in middle school and my friend being like, you could get something from here. I was like, I can. There are several instances of questions around gender and identity over the years. E detailed getting Air first bra, not wanting it at all. Getting told E should shave by an aunt and not understanding why boys didn't have to and not wanting to because the hair was so soft. So for 10 years, Maya only wore pants except for soccer when the uniforms almost completely covered the legs anyway with the socks. Of wishing Air mother had named M a gender neutral name, things like that.
Right. I will say, I love a good gender neutral name. So like I don't mind being referenced as Sam because you don't know, and I'm like, yes, let's just keep it that way. So Maya looked up gay and lesbian in the dictionary after having crushes on boys and girls. Maya told a friend about these crushes before school, and her friend said it was probably just a phase, a common thing. But then Maya got a big crush on another girl, and the friend tried to sabotage it, trying to convince Maya E was not a lesbian. That makes me sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Soon after, an openly gay student announced his intention to form a queer straight alliance. Though it took some courage, Maya went to join one of their meetings. And at these meetings, they talked about gay marriage and gay penguins who raised tango, which I wanted to bring up because that's also one of the most banned books, is the very sweet children's book about these penguins.
Reminds me of the Parks and Rec episode.
Yes. Maya's friends tried to convince M not to go, complaining that E became unbearable after reading gay romance novels. But soon they joined, and the club sort of morphed into a Lord of the Rings fan club.
That's about right.
Complete with discussions about which of the actors were most likely to be gay.
I love that whole unbearable statement, because I do think it's funny. Not that you're unbearable, but you do get caught up in your world of Star Wars or The Last of Us and your theories. I love it. And you're very good about taming yourself, but we know.
It's always back there.
We know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. We know it's coming. Did mm-hmm. you know? No, I did not, but thanks for not telling me.
You will.
You will now. So Maya was called to the office about not wearing deodorant. I feel like that happens to a lot of young kids, and I get it and I don't. I'm like, oh. So E felt it was another example of air ignorance. In the hopes of finally taking to air crush, Maya asked her dad about David Bowie music. And I feel like that's like a queer canon. Like you discover David Bowie and or along those lines of. The crush liked Bowie, and when Maya listened and heard queer lyrics, he fell in love with the lyrics again. Mm-hmm. Am I using that expression canon right? Because it's the new thing.
I've heard it's huge on TikTok, and you still haven't seen Spider-Verse, so I can't even talk about it. Oh, jeez. Anyway, we're going to go see it because we have to do an episode on
it. Yes, we're going to see it.
Okay, perfect. Say angrily. When Maya was 11, E imagined having a penis for the first time. Later, E put a stock down air pants and imagined having a bulge while thinking of air favorite gay ship. And even later, E would dream that air wish had been granted and E had a boner. Then there's a scene talking with air sister, who they seem like they had a great relationship.
Yeah.
Illustrations, I believe. Yeah. About how it never occurred to M to put something in air vagina, nor to taste air self. And that stood out to me because I had the same conversation with a friend of mine when we were in middle school. And it's like, what are you talking about?
I've never had that conversation with a friend. Maybe we were just too shy.
We were never explicit.
We talked about masturbating, but we never explicitly talked about what that meant.
She was talking about a book that she had read where that happened. And so I don't know. It was sort of, she was like, yeah, and then they did this. And I was like, what?
That's fair. I feel like any like sex talk and it gets explicit, you're like, what the hell? Happening.
Yeah, I'm like, what?
For everyone, not just you, but like everyone. I'm like, what?
But me, yes.
But you specifically, yes.
Yes. Anyway, Maya then realized he was attracted to androgyny, which made it difficult to pin down air sexuality. He started to fantasize he had been born with two half souls, one boy and one girl, and he came up with this lost male twin who always felt like he should be a girl, which I thought was interesting.
Right. And I like that whole like half spirits, because it is that two-spirit idea that the natives have always talked about and have always represented. And that's been a part of their culture. Again, if we just listened to the native people, I think we would all be smarter and happier, but that's okay.
Whatever. Yeah.
Anyway, it's not okay. I'm sad. Then Maya learned about the term transgender. This spurred a whole lot of questions about identity, both sexual and gender. E wrote in her journal at 15, I don't want to be a girl. I don't want to be a boy either. I just want to be myself. He dove into reading, articles, books, especially of the queer variety. He got a haircut, a very short one. He loved being described in masculine terms. And that haircut scene really was cute because he was talking about how free they felt for the first time. Mm-hmm. And he used to hate being in pictures, but now loved it.
Yes. And there's a very cute moment about Maya's sister knowing all of this before Maya did, which I really, really liked. Then Maya fell in love with the theater and agreed to go on a date with a dude sort of out of guilt and pity and immediately regretted it when he called M girlfriend. So E called the guy back and canceled. Maya turned to a friend and complained about all the stuff girls are expected to do and be. And Maya's friend said E was the least girly person they knew. Which I also related to this immediate regret. Like, no.
Well, of course. I feel like the extreme, like, you're my girlfriend. I can tell everyone.
Yes.
Yes. How this works, bruh. But okay. Yes. Again, I had that weird one date and the dude was like, I can't find anyone better than you, crying because I had to break up with him after a date. And I'm like, this is intense.
That is intense.
Why are we doing this? Why is this happening? Anyway, this might explain to like older men being just as immature. Who knows? Maya still wrestled with confusion about her sexuality and identity, but felt much happier. He was the only AFAB to wear pants at graduation in 2007. And when we say AFAB, assigned female at birth. He went to college hoping to find love like their parents had. He learned about the damages of chest binding, something he learned after getting cast in a lead male role in the college's small drama program and experiencing jealousy of people without breasts.
Yep. A friend of Maya's tried to set M up with a woman after finding out Maya's sexuality, but Maya ran away, literally ran away. Later, Maya contacted the woman on Facebook, but the woman wasn't scared off and continued to show interest. And confused, Maya thinks this is what E should want, like her parents. Maya spoke to her dad, but was still confused about dating afterwards. Maya called the woman to discuss all of this. And after confirming what a relationship would mean with this woman, basically friendship but with, quote, gross sex in Maya's mind, Maya confirmed E wasn't interested in a relationship. So, yes, Maya is definitely wrestling with, am I asexual? Like, I've got all these things going on. Questions, again. E continued to explore her identity through entertainment, like fan fiction. Yes. Okay, so this scene resonated with a lot of people. No matter your gender identity, E got this gynecology exam and felt very uncomfortable with her nude body and feeling unable to ask questions like, why don't I feel like a girl, to the gynecologist, and experiencing horrible existential pain and swearing after that nothing would ever enter her vagina again. Maya re-examined the idea of being asexual after college when E realized that E probably had less of a sex drive than anyone else, though E had been able to masturbate with just thoughts, which again, I was like, uh-oh, this is me. E sort of accidentally came out as not cisgender when arguing with someone who didn't get why the term was everywhere. And then E discussed the whole thing with Air Mom about how E wished E could remove Air reproductive system. And then E fell into One Direction fandom, which some of you have written in about, and started using fan fiction to work through grief. 100,000 words. But after all the angst, E didn't know how to write a makeout scene. And E decided to make out with someone for fan fiction.
Is this you? Do you do this level of like research? Because I was thinking about like when you talk about doing sex scenes and such. Not that you did that as a research thing, no. But that did get pop into my head.
Well, it's funny because I was reading this, I was nodding my head furiously. Like, I have done ridiculous research for fan fiction. I never kissed someone for it, because I just kind of read other fan fiction, and I have right. kissed people before, but I learned from other fan fiction. But the first, one of the first fan fiction I wrote included a 4-minute makeout scene that a friend of mine who's definitely not asexual read and was like, this is not realistic.
Is it Katie? Did Katie tell you it was Katie. Wrong?
She was right.
Kudos to Katie.
I was just like, how long do you kiss for? Is it a lot of time? Is it a little amount of time?
To like be fan fair, fiction. People who write dramas really go all out and exaggerate all those things. So it's not so unheard of that people would think this.
Yeah, yeah. It was clear that I didn't know, though, what was normal, quote, bless heavy heart. Quotes for kissing length. But I tried my best.
You're good.
Yes. And through this research for fan fiction, E discovered the term autoandrophilia, which is a person who is afab, who is sexually aroused at the thought or image of having a penis, which mm-hmm. I'd never heard before.
I hadn't either.
Yeah. Learning all the time. Anyway, Maya went on a Tinder date. It was a failure. But then another one was a huge success. And they were very open with each other. They had a lot in common. They find types of sexual intimacy that they're both turned on by. However, Maya realized E was more turned on by the imagined fact of having a penis. And E broke off the relationship. Still, Maya reopened Tinder because E never figured out how to end my fanfiction. Yes. Yes. However, solution. Maya contacted Air Friend to write the sex scenes, which is one way to do it.
Yes, yes, yes. And the good thing, the friend was ready. She'd been waiting, she said.
Yeah.
It had thousands of words ready to go. So this is when Maya discovered they/them pronouns. E made mistakes using them at first, but soon it clicked, as in for other people. E met someone on hormones and discussed why E didn't identify as a trans man. Again, it was about less gendered traits, not more. Again, didn't want either. Then E learned about EM air pronouns, and I think I'm putting an accent. So if y'all hearing me, this is my southern accent coming out with the E-M-R.
Yeah, I heard it. I was like,
I hope it's endearing and not offensive.
I think you're good.
Because it's my North Georgia accent happening here. Mm-hmm. Anyway, ask him what he wants in RD. At first, E didn't want to make people uncomfortable by asking people to use these pronouns, even though it felt right. But Air Friend asked him if E would rather feel a little uncomfortable all the time. And when Maya asked Air Gay Aunt about changing pronouns, she was concerned that it was due to an internalized hatred of women. And they came to a good place, but Maya was still plagued with questions and a feeling of being broken. Yeah, and I feel like we had that discussion before we got on to the mic.
Yeah.
About, like, we understood, like, the aunt was just asking a simple question because I'm sure the aunt, being older, had fought for so long for a feminist identity and being mm-hmm. able to fight against misogyny, but also that it centered around the aunt's self and mm-hmm. her own perceptions and how that's so dangerous. And this is what we talk about with white feminism. This is what we talk about in allyship. When people don't understand, it's not about them. And so when they center trying to be empathetic, they center it around themselves instead right. of allowing it to be about that other person, point blank. Right. And it's easy to do because it sounds like you're trying to learn. And it sounds like you're mm-hmm. making a good point. But in actuality, you're making a selfish assumption that yeah. it's about your societal ideals versus what an individual is going through. And I think that's for the whole TERF movement in itself, yeah. also just being bitter, but in general.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a very, I know better than you, and I know about your experience more than you type of mindset. And they did, Like we said, they did come to an understanding, but that is one of the questions Maya gets asked about a lot, is this conversation with the aunt. And then there was a fun kind of moment of realization with Lady Gaga, where Maya was like, I was born this way.
Again, why Lady Gaga is kind of like a queer icon.
Yeah.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And then later at a queer comics convention, Maya puts on an E.M. Air pin, but struggles to correct people who get it wrong. The whole experience inspired Maya to make a comic, and Maya did get better at correcting people. At Air Next gynecology exam, E explained E experienced gender dysphoria, and the doctor agreed to do what they could to make M comfortable, but the experience was incredibly painful, and the doctor prescribed anxiety medication, which is something else I've talked about. Maya then went to a trans rights march, but realized E wasn't happy with the clothes E had, so E went shopping for queer styles. Maya started teaching comics classes to young folks, mostly those AFAB, and started wondering if E was doing a disservice not correcting folks misgendering M, i.e., people would say, I never saw a woman doing this growing up. So Maya decided to come out so children could see a non-binary person in air position, even though you were worried it might get him fired. And that's where it ends. It ends on a very, it's so tragic because it's like a very hopeful message of like, I want to inspire the next generation. I want people to see me. I want people to know that this experience exists. But then there's these concerns of, oh, I might get fired.
Right.
Yeah.
And especially today. Especially knowing Air Book is now on banned lists all over the country, like the highest banned list. It kind of came to fruition, whether it wanted them or not. It was like, it could be, but I feel like it's a good way. Like, Kobe has made headway and made such a difference that it's that loud and it's amazing. But I'm sure had he known this was happening, this would petrify him.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is like, when I was reading this, I kept thinking, I wish I had had this when I was young, number one. But two, what I talked about in our, when Samantha was doing the audiobook and we were also tired, and the like LGBTQ plus terminology, like there's just this, I think it's useful in that we need to talk about it. We need words to talk about it. But it is true that it's far from perfect because there's just so much that you can't put in one letter when it comes to gender identity, sexual orientation, just who you are. This was great because it's true. Like there's just so much that are hard to put into the terminology we currently have. And as I've said several times, like I heard asexual in the 1998 Godzilla movie as a joke about lizards, but I didn't hear it like realistically until I was out of college. And, you know, it's unfortunate because there's that idea that, you know, I should have just known, but I didn't know that that was a thing, that I could be that way, identify as that way. So like having this really kind of kind look at that process of questioning, of I don't know for sure, of I still don't know for sure, was just, it was amazing. It was like, I wish I had had this.
Right.
And it is heartbreaking because it's getting banned when the end message is we should share this with more people.
Right. And that's the thing is like books like these, it gives an explanation for so many. If the world was perfect and we wouldn't, and people accepted what it was, I don't think the conversation of pronouns would be this confusing in general. I believe that, you know, keeping it generic would have been just fine in itself. Not binary. I'm saying generic. Like that's
right.
Like you could have just nothing. Like just the experience of nothing and just being like genderless. We've always been binary to build a hierarchy. And I think that's part of the problem and that's the underlying beginning of the issue. That we can't just pretend like it was normal. It was normal because it was building a system. So when we build a system and there has to be a hierarchy, then you know that this is meant to put someone down. This is meant to put a group of people down, whatever the group may be. And to pretend like that's not how it was set up is naive in itself. I'm speaking very, I guess, deeply at the same time, like generally in this, but that's the fact of the matter. And the reason it's getting dwindled down and deeper and larger is because people continue to push binary ideas to the point that they take over and abuse a certain term and no longer gives the effect that it needs. So it's kind of this level of like, no, this is a battle. This is kind of a war based on just decency and recognition. And that's the conversation that we're not having. And it would be lovely just to have that genderless idea and just be there existing and not hurting each other. That would be a lovely, lovely aspect. But this book is almost kind of testament to what it feels like because A is having to figure out the simplicity through the difficulties, mm-hmm. like through the complications, because no one will allow it to be simple.
Yes.
As simple as, I don't want to be a gender. I don't identify as these genders. I don't identify in these sexualities. I just want to be mm-hmm. and just want to be loved in that and not have the fear of that. And being discovering that, because it's so radical, even though it's almost the simplest.
Right. Well, that was one of the things that really struck me about reading this, is that it's over and over again clear that gender is a learned structure. And because Maya grew up homeschooled, it's when you see it from a child's eyes who didn't grow up with it, I think you can really recognize how arbitrary a lot of this stuff is, of, oh, I can't, my hair has to be this certain length, or, oh, I have to wear these certain things. And it's just somebody, like, societally telling you that you have to do that. But if you are outside of that, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And that whole idea I really, really related to, of, like, this idea, like, people have access to a secret knowledge that you don't have. Because if you're not heteronormative, it doesn't make sense to you, but it feels like it makes sense to everybody else. And you feel like then something is wrong with you, or like you're not smart and you're not picking up on something. And it's not that. Like, it's just we have these structures and how we think people should have to be based on these hierarchies, like you said, and based on just these roles we've told ourselves, that people have told us, this is how it is. And so if you don't fit into that, and that's kind of the key, is like the fitting in. That's kind of the issue with the letters of the LGBTQ plus, which again, I think is useful, but has its problems. Because if you're like, well, I don't fit in here and I don't fit in here, like, you're just always trying to find where you should go. And if you've never heard of it before, of whatever it is you're feeling, if you've never talked to anybody else who's felt that way or identifies that way, it can feel very much like lonely, and that you are like, I convinced myself I was in a phase for a long time.
Right. But this is that, again, this comes back to, you have to label yourself to mm-hmm. fit into the hierarchy. You have to be able to mm-hmm. label yourself to see where you stand in society in general, and which place you are and where you are on the structure. And which is kind of that whole level of like, no, the spectrum is a very useful conversation, in that at the very least, the spectrum puts you in one line with variations. Again, because it's not all black and white, and it's not concrete about mm-hmm. what it is. And it doesn't really make sense that it should. To be honest, if we fluctuate and if we are people who change in tastes or ideals or in conversation or like beliefs, then why wouldn't everything else go with that?
Right.
As simple as like your fashion. Your fashion may change and it becomes androgynous to feminine to masculine to whatever. It's kind of that same level of what do you identify as in your style. For me, mm-hmm. grandma, sure, I'm a grandma with my cardigan. Or maybe I'm Mr. Rogers. I could be definitely that too.
Ooh.
You know, I'm down that road of spectrum. But like mm-hmm. the conversation lies into that. This whole book is a look at why structures like this are damaging,
mm-hmm.
Can be confusing, and then overall, again, ostracizing and lonely. And I think that's why seeing this perspective is so good, because it's not necessarily like, for me, it was educational more than anything else, so like relatable. It was educational, but it also, again, it was so simple in that, in seeing how lonely A were and was throughout this process. Not because A wanted to be with somebody. That was not A's goal.
Mm-hmm.
A's goal was trying to figure out why that didn't matter to him, you know, and then feeling abnormal. Because mm-hmm. A couldn't identify why. And that kind of brings back to the conversation of like, I hate that A had to even have this moment of themselves, because A had to really, really focus on trying to figure himself out
mm-hmm.
and lost a lot of just being themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also, I had to kind of really examine some of my own thoughts, because when I was reading it, I did have a moment of like, oh, whoa, I can't believe they have this in libraries, which is terrible. And I thought about it, and I think one of the big issues is we don't have sex education here. We don't have it. And when we do, it is highly sexualized. So, like, if you haven't read it, which I highly recommend that you do, there are sexual images, as we mentioned at the top, but they're not like gratuitous explicit. Or graphic or explicit. No. No, it's not. And the thing is, if we had sex education, I don't think we would be having as big of a conversation about this. And we should have sex education because that is just something we should be having. Like, so I do feel a lot of this for some of you. And I will admit it. Like, I had a moment of like, whoa. And this is a girl who's reading damn fan fiction in seventh grade. And I, whoo. That they had this in schools. But then I was like, I don't think it should be that way. I think it should be the opposite way. I think we should be able to read this in schools as someone who at that age would have related to it and would have really benefited from it, and not have it be, quote, obscene, pornographic.
Right.
We can't have kids reading this, seeing this. Right.
I mean, honestly, in the sixth grade, I was reading and watching renditions of Romeo and Juliet where a 14-year-old gets married and then murders himself. So, I mean, come on. Like, that's what we grew up as educational.
Mm-hmm.
In the sixth grade, really, really jumped into like, oh, this must be romance, right? This is true romance. Nah, bro. It's not.
No.
To be real, real clear on that. But yeah, and when we're talking about sex education, we're talking about nothing that exists here today, because when we're talking about sex education, what we're talking about is talking about the spectrum of sexuality and why that's important, a spectrum of gender identity and why that's important. Understanding that some of these things are traumatic versus some of the things not. Like the whole conversation about gynecologists, we don't talk enough about that experience to young girls who have to go in and not realize what is happening, to be strapped up on a table, and oftentimes with men looking up your all your things when you've been told that is private and no one's to see it and everything should be covered up at all times, and then not understanding, like, we demonize that in general because, you know, if it smells and you're dirty, or if it's not perfectly shaven or clean, it's dirty. You know, all these conversations, and not even sure how to clean it. Like, we're not even having that conversation. That level of what we're talking about in sexuality, having a conversation about this is what birth control pill is. It's not just for you having, like, if you are sexually active, it can be for regulating your period, which can be bad. And y'all, it's not normal to be hurting this much. I really thought it was. Yeah. I really thought I was supposed to be hurting with clots that were like quarter size coming out of my body. And then being told later, no, that's not normal. I'm like, oh, what?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, that's not normal. And not figuring it out till my mid-20s. Mm-hmm. Being petrified and then being quiet because I thought this pain is supposed to be normal.
Right.
Once again, and that's part of that conversation. Also, being whatever shame it is to your body is not okay, but being told that that's normal.
Right.
To cover it up. Like, we don't talk about any of those things, and it should be talked about. And yes, men should hear about it, and boys should hear about it, and they need to understand it so they can shut the hell up when we're saying we're having period cramps and you're going to get cursed out if you look at me wrong.
Yeah. No, it's true. I think that one of the key things when I was reading this was that kind of shame. We have shamed so much of these conversations around sexuality and gender identity and women's bodies and like gynecology being wrapped up in that. I've talked before, like my first gynecology exam, I was 15 and it traumatized, like, no joke. I still think about it. It's the first horror story I've wrote on 13 Days of Halloween is based on it. It traumatized me.
Yeah. And you're not the only one. And then we talked about IUDs, and I know Kristen and Caroline did an episode because Caroline talks about her experience versus my experience. But that's the thing, is like, people come in, like, it's a sign you're fine. And then people are vomiting and having experiences like of being in pain for years because they can't say the right things or whatever, whatnot. And yeah, I think that's again, that bigger point of like, okay, when we talk about sex ed, we're talking about everything. Mm-hmm. We should be preparing people for whatever, for men too, for boys too, about like it's normal to have erections this time, that time. It's not normal to act out on it or anything. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Any and all the things should be talked about in front of each other. If it's so embarrassing, yeah, you can split the, you know, genders up however you want to do it, but then still talk about it. Just because mm-hmm. one gender's not there doesn't mean that it shouldn't be discussed about. And talking about real feelings. And then I love the reference to the book with the doctor who talks about breaking down of sexuality and as it not being like you may have a female body with a lot of more testosterone. So therefore you are more masculine in like fields and hormones. And yeah, you see that it's evident when you meet certain people, you're like, yeah, this is prevalent. Like biologically it's prevalent. You can see this. And I love that Maya talks about feeling heard and seen after reading the book and realizing, mm-hmm. oh, it is biological, the reference to I'm born this way.
Mm-hmm.
But we should have that level of biological conversation.
Yes.
Than just the straight binary, you have a penis, you have a vagina, congratulations. Or I'm sorry.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have an episode I want to come back to because I was talking with some people at D&D the other day, and we were talking about our career days, and it's amazing how damn gendered they were. And I got a sheet that was just, it just said all about you, and it was the female body, and it just had arrows pointing at things. And I was supposed to take this and learn anything, anything from it.
Right.
So it's true. Like, and I think that was something else, you know, finding that piece from that doctor and having things click into place. But there was also a lot of, as you know, I loved a lot of the kind of importance of representation and entertainment, or just in general, or just like finding ways to work through things. It did break my heart that Harry Potter was in there, because now we know I'm in the same boat. But like Tamora Pierce, Mercedes Lackey, there was a Johnny Weir cosplay, erotic gay fan fiction, which I feel like so many people, that's something else people are like, but you don't like sex. And I'm like, well, sometimes you just want people, it's like almost about them being happy. I know you're into it. I want you to get it if you are. There was mention of NaNoWriMo. There was Settlers of Catan.
Yes. Ooh. Yay.
Boo.
Yay. I'm covering your boos.
No.
Yay.
I think that was one of my biggest at the end. I just wished that I had had this as a young person, because you don't know. And no one's helping us, to be honest. Like, I got an about me worksheet, and that was the end. And it's getting worse. Like, I wasn't taught this, and now there are all these bans.
Well, it's getting worse, but it's getting better, because I feel like my niece Gracie, who has been in a plethora of relationships as of recent, with trans, non-binary, polyamorous, all the people, and I'm like, wow. My niece, who has grown up in a very conservative, I was worried about her a little bit when she was retweeting Donald Trump at one point, way back when, y'all.
Yeah.
Way back when.
Okay.
She has grown and learned. I'm very proud of her. But like seeing that being a simple, like, yeah, it is. Why wouldn't I? How is this not normal? Like bringing them home and meeting the conservative family members and being proud of bringing them home. You know, like when I would bring home friends, I remember warning my parents, they have earrings, a lot of piercings. They have a nose ring.
Yeah.
Don't react. Like to my parents, you know, like stuff like that. But to see my niece, who is a young 20s, really taken in on that, and really her whole group of friends, most of them have come away from that conservative line to this is the new normal. And I love seeing that. And that this day and age, yes, these big book bans are happening and the conservatives are doing this, but it's not working like they think it is.
Yeah.
When it comes to the younger generations, they give no shits, and they have social media and they spread it even farther. And I love seeing that. I love that keeping on, because that is the new attitude. And we've talked previously, like when they were banning books previously, there was pushback. But obviously the banning of the books from the 1950s to the 1990s to today has vastly changed, because the pushback is different. And the generations who are wanting these bans happen are typically dying off. Like, delightful.
No, you're totally right. Like, I do think, as I said, I'm really glad that we read this book, but I don't know that we would have read it without the book ban. And I think that it is getting a lot of traction because of it. And because it's good. It's good. And I kind of hate that Maya keeps having to talk about people just interviewing M about book bans, when the whole thing it's so good. And it's just... Like I said, it felt like reading a diary, but it felt so novel because I've never really heard anybody talk about it, even though I literally left thinking I've got to re-examine some stuff about myself.
That's like, oh, that's an amazing moment.
Yeah.
And I think, again, the way Maya Gobabe does this book, it is geared towards those who are lost today because they felt isolated. So it's a youthful interpretation of more themes that you could tell A wanted this themselves as a youth, and so A is writing it to themselves as a youth, if that makes sense. And I love that, because A adds on so many great scientific things, references, so many new words or new concepts that many people may not have known, but does it in such an open and vulnerable way that it is, again, looks like a love letter, but at the same time, an admonishment to themselves as a youth for not only to help with their struggles, but also to encourage others in whomever else is struggling. So it's like all of these things. It's beautifully done.
It really is. I did have a lot of, it hit close to home. Like I was just reading it thinking, oh yeah, I was telling you before, Samantha, like I hated having breasts as a kid to the point like it was a running joke amongst my friends that I hated it. And I always assumed it was because I had all this trauma and I like knew they drew attention, which could be true. But after reading this, I was like, I wonder something else could be true as well. It's just, that's the power of this kind of story, of like this kind of sharing and openness, is it invites other people to understand more about others, but also themselves. So it really did hit. I was reading it like, oh, damn.
Oh. I think we were both thinking of you when we were reading it.
Yeah, I was shocked. I was like, oh. And then, like, we already talked about this, but just to be clear, like, this whole idea, it's not rejecting womanhood. I really liked this quote towards the end, which was a description of gender as a landscape. Some are born in the mountains, some at sea level. Some are happy where they are born, but others want to move.
Right.
Simple as that. Like you said, like
it's simple. Like that's, again, if people could just take it as the story of Maya Kobabe and not women in general or men in general, it's that simple. Like it didn't even cross my mind that this was anything concerning womanhood.
Right.
Until A wrote about the aunt and I was like, oh, no, it's obvious. And again, this is different because we have our book to tell us straightforward what it's about.
Right.
As where when A was talking to the aunt just heard different pronouns. Don't want to be a woman. What type of conversation? So again, not saying the aunt was bad or the villain in this book at all. But the fact of the matter is, if you take it as this is about Maya Kobabe and air experience and any person who feels neither of these binary words fit them, it has nothing to do with womanhood, period, as a whole. It has nothing to do with me describing myself as a woman, period. So I don't understand how that's offensive or an attack. So let's just, and I don't see that as a misogynistic inter-turmoil for A at all. It is literally just the turmoil that they've been struggling with the entirety of their life and trying to find a point of being happy.
Yeah. And I do think it's worth reflecting on, like I said, the limitations of language, because we did gender. Not all languages are gendered. And that's not to say that they don't have issues either, but not all languages are gendered.
And it makes sense. Or it's much like, again, the indigenous peoples who talks about being two-spirited. And that's an open wide of all the things, whether it's being both or neither.
Right. Right. So that's something to always keep in mind in this. And it is unfortunate because, like I said, if I had known about this, it could have changed the course of my life. And, you know, the learning of it's still problematic in terms of, you know, just because you learn a new word, it doesn't necessarily change, but it gives you something to be like, okay, that makes sense to me. And maybe the word for what you are doesn't exist. And like I said, it's so vast that some words can't, like maybe just one word can't capture it. But yeah, I recommend it. I really, really enjoyed it. I loved the fan fiction bits. If we weren't going along, I would just go into that because I was like, yes, yes. But yes, we recommend that you check it out if you haven't already. As always, we would love to hear your suggestions for our next pick. You can email us at stephaniamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at Momstuff Podcast or on Instagram and TikTok. As Stefan ever told you, also on YouTube. Also, we have a Tee Public store. Also, we have a book you can pre-order. You can pre-order it at stuffyoushouldreadbooks.com or on Audible. Thanks as always to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you all.
Yes. And thanks to you for listening. Stefan Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.